Bonjour et bienvenue sur One Footer in the Grave. Je m'appelle Albert Galoche et dans cet épisode, je suis accompagné, comme toujours, par mes bons amis Paul, l'escargot Boag, Jean, le fromage Hex et Marcus, beaucoup le vin rouge Lillington. Bonjour, messieurs. Comment allez-vous?
Hang on a minute. He can't get red wine and I get snails. That is just outrageous.
I'm impressed you knew what they were, Paul.
It's Have I told you about my alter ego, my French alter ego, Albert Galoche?
I don't think you have. But I can feel it coming on, though.
Well, so when we go to France, you often see, like, in the middle of a, you know, a little French village, at the side of the road, there's usually a bench and it's got three old rotund Frenchmen with large moustaches sitting there wearing, you know, shorts and a string vest.
We were waiting for you to come.
And I would just like to one day be one of those men. So I came up with this name. It's like Albert Galoche. And I just like the name Galoche. Thinking that it meant good. Wellington boots, you know, like galoshes. But apparently, no, in French, galoche means a passionate kiss.
What, like a snog?
Yeah, like a snog with tongues. So, yes, so Albert Galoche. Bonjour, mesdames sexy, je m'appelle Albert Galoche. Voudrez-vous voir ma baguette grande?
Le saucisson dans ce plastique.
Ah oui, c'est très bien. C'est très, très passionnel. Anyway, so yes.
This has gone in a direction I really wasn't expecting, I have to say.
No.
Yeah, I thought we voted out years ago.
We're literally just at the start, and already people are unsubscribing because of the dirty.
Yeah. It's not me. It's not me.
It's Albert
Galoche.
Although, as somebody that has literally just been looking at our analytics, I don't think we have to worry about too many people unsubscribing.
Okay, that's good.
Because there's not a lot of people subscribing.
So if they did, so we'd be in minus numbers.
We would be. Is that possible?
I'd like to do a quick little piece of follow-up. Yes. I spent the last episode, whenever that was, plugging the wonderful, and it's sitting behind me right now, Dreamtime electric heated blanket.
Don't tell me that there's a problem with this because I bought one Lee for Christmas.
Well, no, here's the thing. It's not a Dreamtime electric blanket. It is a Dreamland electric blanket. Thank you to Paul for pointing that out.
So it's still working okay. That's not a problem.
Oh, yeah, no, it's warming the small of my back right now.
Do we have anything to talk about on this show? Because there were no notes sent around or anything.
You haven't been paying attention.
What? Where was that then? Oh, we haven't gone back to Slack again.
No. We're on the iMessage thread, and I wanted to follow up with the electric blanket news, which I've now done.
That's good.
I'd like to talk about social media in general.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to be like one platform that we can all like read together. There's always one platform with one person missing. So with Slack, it was Andy, just like, you know, nowhere to be seen. And now it's Paul. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen the messages now. It was probably, I was swearing at clients at the
Fair
time.
Enough. This led to the idea, I assume, of is social media dead because we can't even manage to speak to each other on the same platform? I guess is what kicked the thought off, maybe.
It did kick the thought off because, yes, and I apologise to you here and now that I was absent from Slack because I used Slack a lot for, you know, actual work when I was working on
and now
the,
you don't work. No?
On the Swiss client. And now, to be perfectly honest, I have no reason, apart from you three, I have no reason to use Slack because I'm not using it constantly every day for
that's a reason.
You know, client conversations and things like that. So it just became that I just forgot to log into it. So and because I never had it on my phone, I always only had it on the Mac, and I always have notifications turned off, I just forgot. I forgot Slack was a thing.
Well, I mean, you could argue, I mean, so it's not really social media anyway, is it?
No, it isn't. Slack. But it did make me think. And you and I had a conversation, Paul, a couple of weeks ago about about sort of general marketing of services, because public information, Andy would quite like to get some design work. So we were talking about the ways in which we, you know, can promote ourselves, you know, either as a small agency or a freelancer or whatever it would happen to be. And, you know, back in the day, I used to be able to, you know, I could tweet any old crap and get some form of engagement. And usually that's exactly what I did. I always treated Twitter mainly like, you know, oh, I'm having beans on toast, rather than doing what Paul generally did, which was to do a lot more kind of promotional stuff. But although, you know, I've moved on to other platforms, occasionally I will think, okay, I've got something that I want to publish and I'll go back to Twitter X. And it's crickets, completely crickets. And we seem to have lost that place where you could reach everybody. And and the more I talk to people in our industry, the less they're talking about social platforms as a, you know, a means of kind of talking to the community. And it seems to have gone much back. I mean, Mastodon, which I use a lot, is basically just a, you know, a Slack channel for people that know me. It's essentially what it is. And a few kind of onlookers. And we seem to have gone away from that whole kind of social, one social platform where, you know, kind of you could guarantee that everybody would be looking. And I suppose there'd be less of an algorithm. So when you did actually post something, you could be more assured that people would actually see it. So I just wondered what you thought about that. You know, is the whole kind of social thing dead? Social media thing dead for, you know, friendly conversation or for getting news or finding tips on design or development or whatever it was that we used to get out of these things, and for actually publicizing the stuff that we, you know, that we want to get out to our, well, according to the statistics, massive podcast audience.
Well, that's the thing, it's not dead, it's just fragmented. You know, it's now split up into lots of smaller silos. But I think it does prove that time travel doesn't exist and never has in the future. Because, you know, someone would have gone back to said, well, you know, we lost a lot with Twitter going down. And someone would have come back in time and taken out Elon. Maybe some kind of like Terminator-type character. That would be fun. But it hasn't happened, and he's still in charge. We've lost the decentralized. We've lost that big central place that everyone met, and yeah, it's smaller places. But I would disagree with my Mastodon experience is different to yours in that, you know, it's becoming more like the old Twitter, and that's because of following things like Fesshole, or there's this account that does. A frame of the film 2001, one frame per hour, and it's going to take 5 years to see the whole film. I've since found out there's actually one that's tweeting much quicker than that. So, you know, depending on the speed. But, you know, I'm sort of following other people from outside the industry. It's starting to get that feeling. What it doesn't have is things like bands that I follow, so musicians, which tends to be threads. So it tends to be the musicians I follow that were on Instagram. Threads is an easy replacement for them. They're already on Instagram. Essentially means they've kind of got a Threads account already. So in terms of like digesting stuff, Mastodon is the one for me. And it's a good experience. But in terms of promotion and getting word out, also, I do tend to fall... I'll let someone talk in a minute. Mastodon, I do tend to fall foul a little bit of the open source community. if I ever post anything, there's always someone saying, oh, well, you should be using free open source software. It's just that, it's that the kind of audience. Anyway, that was my thought.
How have you got on with Threads, just out of interest? Because my experience of Threads is...
Let's talk about your experience of Threads. You're getting a lot of naked ladies, aren't you? It's a bit spicy, your feed.
Well, it's a weird thing, and I don't know whether it's something to do with the...
It's a weird thing.
I mean, I don't follow naked lady accounts on Instagram, for example. But public thing, my whatever you call it, the For Me tab or something, that's the algorithm generated thing on Threads, is it's all those posts that I've been doing screenshots of on Mastodon, which is, you know, there was one yesterday I saw which was like, would you date a woman with a large belly? And then there's like a semi-naked large lady with her belly hanging out. And this time, I mean, I suppose this is why it happens, but this time I thought, who are you? And I clicked on the profile link thinking, why has it come to me in my feed? And there it is. The only link goes to an OnlyFans. So that my experience of Threads has been, let's say, less than... it's been quite entertaining, but it's not exactly, you know, what I went there for.
Do you know what?
I mean, promise.
Threads, I've never had that on Threads. I get people arguing about electric vehicles, which tends to be because I follow Dennis... My friend Dennis, who just talks about design in electric vehicles and Volvos and things all the time. So actually the For You tab seems to be full of that kind of thing. It's all the stuff related to people that I follow and the algorithm saying, well, if you follow them and they like this, you must like this. But I only ever look at the following tab. It's a cesspit otherwise.
There's kind of two different issues here, isn't there? There's the promotional aspect that you were talking about, Andy, of you know, using it as a way to generate work, and then there's the social aspect of it. From a social aspect, you know, even with the way that John just described Mastodon, he described it in a mm-hmm. consumption way, that it was a place where he went and consumed content. It wasn't I don't feel like any social network has got any degree of conversational dialogue really happening. But that, I think, is more of a kind of reflection in society as a whole, that we've all become quite shouty at one another these days. You know, and everybody has very strong opinions about absolutely everything. And I think social media amplifies that. So I think from a social point of view, social media isn't social anymore. You can consume content via it, which brings you on to the second aspect of it, which is it a platform where you can actually get and promote work anymore, you know, or win work? And I would argue that time has gone as well, really. I think what happened is there was a group of us that for a long time were legitimately sharing our experiences, what we were learning, trying to give back to a community or participate in a community. And then this concept of content marketing came along. And now everybody treats these platforms, everything from blogs through to social media, as essentially a way to build their personal brand and to put out content and things like that. So essentially, social media now is a broadcast mechanism for broadcasting whatever it is that you want to promote these days. And I don't see a lot of people listening. They're all broadcasting. And I'm just as bad with this. You know, I've abandoned social media. I never open social media anymore. I still post to social media, right? Because, you know, I've got Buffer, and Buffer shoves it all out to every social media platform. But there's no dialogue there anymore. And I've created my own little places where I do that kind of stuff separate from social media platforms, because there's just no conversation there.
I will pick up on the whole conversation thing, because, again, that is something I do find on Mastodon, that there is the conversations happening, which is nice. is really nice what happens. But again, I wouldn't be able to use it as something to promote. I mean, one thing recently, I wasn't really promoting it, but I'd made a thing. So I'd made this thing called the Mortimizer, which was Bob Mortimer came up with this naming convention for, you know, silly names for people. And it's a normal first name and like an object or something like that, or some nonsense thing as a second name. So I just came up with this thing. It's taken me, you know, quite a few months of just thinking of things and adding to it. And so, you know, you can just press a button and you can get a name like, you know, Ken Hamster or something. And it's, in terms of like posting links for that, you know, for me, Mastodon got the most engagement, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really a promotional thing. It wasn't trying to get through work. It was just a bit of silliness that I was spreading. But things like, you know, Threads, Facebook, whatever, Instagram. Again, I don't know if it's just because that's where I spend most of my attention and effort. So people talk about LinkedIn as being the place that they then use to promote and to garner work, which I can't, I don't have the energy or motivation yet to do that, to do LinkedIn. But they claim that's where they get their most, but that's probably because of the amount they put into it.
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is very much broadcasting. You know, there is a lot of people broadcasting stuff.
I would imagine of all of us, you'd be the one to be using LinkedIn.
Again, and I have, you know, I do try and I do get some leads through LinkedIn just occasionally. But 90% of the people that reach out to me via LinkedIn are trying to sell me something. Everybody, that's my general feeling with most social media. And I would agree Mastodon is the exception and probably the best of the bunch. But 90% of the communication is somebody trying to make me click something, buy something, do something, promote something on their behalf, whatever else. I mean, Twitter now, I opened Twitter randomly for the first time in ages. And I had all of these direct messages of people that I don't follow, which never used to be a thing even. But anyway, and it was all, hey, I see you're active on Product Hunt. Yeah, occasionally I like things on Product Hunt. Please vote for this, you know? And so it's all, and I don't mean that as a criticism of these people even. I mean, you know, to some extent I do the same. You know, I promote my stuff. But I've kind of, I guess I just don't care about social media anymore. It provides me with zero business benefit. And it personally, it doesn't fulfill me. Perhaps Mastodon probably would more. But even then, I've kind of lost my desire to share what I have for breakfast. Yeah. You know, there's only so many years you can talk about that kind of shit.
That's what I found. I remember Andy extolling the virtues of Mastodon probably about a year ago on this very show. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go. And I signed up and I paid money for Ivory or whatever it was. And I tried for about 2 months. And then I realized after about a further 2 months that I'm just not into it. It's just not for me. And I wonder whether, again, that's no criticism of anybody who it is for, or one way. My thought on that is whether that there are many people like me that have gone, I've tried that, don't really like it anymore. So therefore, many more people won't be using it because of that.
I do think things have their time, don't they? And then they.
I kind of feel like I took Twitter for granted while it was around because it was such a huge meeting place. But yeah, going back to what you were saying, Marcus, about Mastodon. I find as I get older, there's this big folder of stuff that I sort of file things in my mind, and the folder just says "can't be asked." And there's all sorts of, and LinkedIn's for one of those for me. So I know that I should be promoting more. I know that I would, you know, to promote my business, I really should be on there, no matter how much I hate it. But it's in that folder, can't be asked.
I've been trying LinkedIn a lot more. because it is where I tend to find the most engagement with people that, you know, I don't necessarily think are in the first, you know, one, two, three circles of people that I know. It doesn't generate work necessarily, certainly not kind of directly. I don't get people, if I post up a design, I don't get somebody immediately coming back and going, yes, you know, here's a few grand and a couple of weeks' work. But I think it's all part of the general kind of activity. So, you know, for the amount that I actually do put on there, it's not much of an overhead. But I've been putting more focus on LinkedIn, I suppose, as a different platform to Twitter than pretty much anything else.
Hmm.
I think my problem is that they all suffer from basically the same, from a business point of view now, they all suffer from basically the same problem, which is that you're faced with your feed of all of your updates, and they just shoot past so far and so fast that you're not digesting anything that you're being presented with. And I think, well, if I'm not digesting all of the things that are in my feed, then are anybody else? Are people even going to see my post? And so the kind of way that I've replaced social media in my life, at least, is from a social point of view, I have a Slack group that I hang out in and who only a small number of people post. I mean, there are a couple of thousand, I think, have joined the Slack group, but there's only maybe a dozen of people post regularly.
Maybe 30?
It's more than that.
Something like that. But 30, out of, then, yeah, thousands, right? Is, yeah.
Yeah, and we just, you know, I set it up myself and I basically said, look, I'm going to create a place where we don't talk about politics. We don't, you know, shout about, you know, virtue signalling or anything like that. We just keep it, you know, most of the time we just say morning to one another and that's about it. You know, so that's kind of social side of things. And then from the business side of things, I've turned back to email. And I've turned back to email because it is the one channel that I know where I can guarantee that people actually pay attention. Because for better or worse, if you're selling to business like we all are, we're selling to other businesses, people live in email and they see everything that passes through their inbox. They might not read everything that goes through the inbox, but they'll at least see my name every week and be reminded that I exist. And I've had more success through email than I have any social media channel.
Really?
By far.
Oh, gosh. Mm.
So, I mean, that's kind of how I've solved it.
And we're following the BOAG model as well, but we're slowly following the BOAG model. Chris and I are getting together a kind of vault of things to talk about before we set up the ongoing newsletter idea. But yeah, it seems to make sense to me because we've got thousands of people that we've spoken to over the years who might be interested in saying, yeah, go on then, I'll sign up for that. And as Paul says, they might not ever read anything, but at least they're reminded we exist on a weekly, fortnightly, whatever basis.
Well, I am also going to follow the BOAG model as well.
Can we not call it the BOAG model? Because I'd like to stress that I'm not the first person to suggest email. You know, it's not a revolutionary creation.
Own it, Paul, own it.
Okay, the BOAG model, great, fine.
So egotistical.
Because it does make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't subscribe to a huge amount of newsletters. But I do sit and read the ones that I, you know, that I did choose to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Vela's, for example. I can't remember when it was that I subscribed to that, but it must have been 15 years ago, and it still pops into my inbox. So I do think that point about it being something that, you know, you are in front of somebody reliably until they choose that you're not, is actually much better, and it feels more right to me than throwing 100 things onto a social media channel, because you can't guarantee that if you just do it once, anyone's going to see it. You know, the algorithm's going to, you know, bury it, or people are busy, or it's the wrong time of day. Which is why I suppose people throw so much crap at these platforms, just to make sure that point, you know, they're seen.
And that's the other thing I really like about email. I can send something quality once a week rather than posting crap 10 times a day, you know? And for me, basically, my newsletter, my emails, have become my blog. They are me blogging regularly and sharing with my audience, and they even get reposted to my blog. And yes, I do then promote those on social media, but not that it ever brings any bloody traffic in, you know. But that's you know, I prefer quality over quantity, which is what you're saying, I guess.
It was interesting talking about newsletters because it is very trendy and everyone seems to now have their own newsletter to the extent where it feels like it's replacing their blogs. Again, that's one of the things in my big folder of can't be asked, but it's... I don't know. I have that kind of fear of missing out a little bit. Like, you know, should I be doing a newsletter? If so, what would I do?
I'd like to think of it being like a fanzine.
Exactly.
In that kind of, you know, just rough and ready, not particularly polished.
You know, oh, okay.
I do love the kind of fanzine idea. I could do a design fanzine.
It does feel very much to me like I'm going back to my roots of blogging. Because even blogs, right, over their life cycle compared to, let's say 2005 compared to 2015, right? We look at blogging or even 2024 or whatever we're in now. These days, a blog is this super polished long article, which is always keyword optimized and, you know, all this bullshit in it, right? 2005, most of my blogs were riddled with spelling mistakes, were just me thinking aloud and sharing that with other people. That's what I've recaptured with my newsletter. One of the things that, for me, emails have enabled me to do, it's allowed me to write about what I want to write about, not what people are necessarily searching for, right? And I'm very honest about this in the emails that I send out. I say, look, you don't know what you don't know, right? And that's the trouble with search engines. You only ever find out what you ask a question about. You're never exposed to other stuff. While my emails allow me just to talk about other stuff, whatever I think is important. And if you're interested in what I think is important, then you can subscribe. If you don't want that noise, you don't have to. And it's given me an enormous freedom just to write all kinds of stuff, even though I know it probably isn't very popular, except it has turned out to be popular. There is actually a desire amongst people to hear whatever random shit I want to say. And that's kind of encouraging, really, and feels much more like that 2005 blogging. But the danger is, again, you fall into the trap of worrying about your metrics and are your number of subscribers going up and are you getting the right kind of people? And, you know, you get sucked into it. It's that letting go of that whole content marketing bullshit. And just going, I'm going to write about something because I'm interested in writing about it. And that's the problem, I suspect, for you, John, with the can't be asked. It's not that you can't be asked to use email or you can't be asked to use LinkedIn. It's more that you can't be asked to jump through all the hoops you're supposed to do it properly. And you want to talk about what you want to talk about.
Well, the thing is, everything you're talking about is my blog. And, you know, I see my blog as the place where... I don't care if it, you know, I don't look at analytics. I don't know if it's more popular than not, but it's the place where I talk about what I want to talk about. So it's, you know, should a newsletter then be basically another form of RSS? You know, is that just a compilation of recent blog posts? In which case, I could do that, you know.
That is literally, that is all mine is. It's literally, I blog once a week where it posts to the blog, right? And is sent to someone's inbox. Oh. That's it. Mm. It's the same content. And I also even record an audio version of that blog post, which people can subscribe to as a podcast. It's all the same content, just being delivered through different mechanisms. And that's all I do. And also, when it's on put on the blog, it's shoved out to social media. So basically, however people want to, you know, consume my random thoughts, there is a way of doing it. But it's the email that gets the most engagement. And people write back to me. And it's awesome. Every time I send an email out, you know, there's always a couple of people that write back to me. They're telling me I'm wrong about something, which is fair enough if they want to do that. But a lot of people say, thank you, Paul, for saying that. I've always felt like that. And that's because I'm saying things that I would never write as a content marketing article, as you're supposed to do today. You know, I'm talking about things like I wrote one recently, which was good enough is good enough. And the idea that not everything has to be perfect. You know, you wouldn't get an article, you know, who would Google on that? Am I doing good enough? You know, but it works great. It's a newsletter / old fashioned blog. Oh, you would do.
Because I don't know. Am I doing good enough? Am I doing okay? So I Google it and I, you know, I get told that I'm not.
Fair enough. Yeah. But do you know what I'm getting at?
You Google, is John Hicks doing okay?
Yeah. Is he slacking?
Which is what I'm going to do right now.
Yeah, see what it says. Ask AI. That's what we need to do.
Is
Ask
John
AI.
Hicks doing
any
okay?
good? I've just asked ChatGPT. I said, is the web designer John Hicks doing good work? John Hicks is known for his significant contributions to graphic and web design, notably for his work on the Firefox logo and his contribution to the interface design for browsers like Opera and application icons. His reputation in the design community remains very positive. So there you go, John. You've got.
Do you know
answer.
What? If for once AI didn't hallucinate and actually told the truth.
Time to retire on a high, John.
Someone asked AI to write a biography for me, and it went on about all these DNAD design awards that I'd won, and you know, it was basically it started off as being sort of about me, and then branched off into this parallel universe, John, that was really successful, and yeah.
I'm very, very disappointed because I just wrote exactly the same query, but with my name instead of John's. And it says, as of my last update in January 22, Andy Clark was still active in the web design community and known for his innovative work. However, I don't have any real-time information about his current projects or activities. You might want to check his website.
There is something I wanted to talk about. Now, admittedly, I didn't get this in the list of things we were discussing today because I wasn't paying attention. But I had a really interesting conversation with somebody recently who had been very successful in their career and had done great in our field. I won't name him because I don't want to embarrass him. But he basically said, I've kind of achieved all I'm going to, right? And we're all in that situation now. You know, we're not going to have this momentous, you know, resurgence in our popularity or do something incredible at this point in our careers. So what next? What is, when you look forward to the, you know, your inevitable demise at the sudden death of the universe because you'll live forever, what are you going to do with your life from now on?
Oh, God.
John looks terrified. It's an interesting question because I've been thinking a lot about it. It's like, what's in store for me? What am I? And Andy, I know you've been thinking about it to some degree.
I have, a lot.
So it's an interesting thing of where do you go now?
So what do you think, Marcus?
I've always said that if I was able to retire tomorrow, I would, and I would not be one of those people that would go, I'm so bored, I need to go back to work. And I know that is genuinely a thing. A lot of people retire and they're lost. I know there's a guy down the pub who's exactly like that. He retired probably 5 years ago, and all the sort of friends we've got around here say, oh, Steve's just not the same as he used to be. He's just not the same man. So it's really quite sad from that perspective. But that ain't me. Oh, no. I've basically been doing this work in this sphere now for coming up to 30 years, maybe not, 26, 27 years.
Yeah.
And I've basically been doing something I don't want to do at quite a stressful level. And that's fine. It is what it is. I don't have the creative skills that you guys have, particularly John and Andy. I'm more in Paul's sphere, but you have a marketing skill, Paul.
Yeah.
And mine is sort of, I don't know, running business and doing sales and that kind of thing. So it's the day when I can go, you know what? I don't have to worry about making sure that we hit a target this month. Will be a very, very, very happy day. And I reckon I've got, and I don't know if I'm kidding myself when I say this, but I reckon I've got 5 years till I can get to that point. I'm not going to be able to retire then, but I'll be able to go down to, I don't know, delivering for Tesco's, working in the garden centre. I don't know, make it up. Guitar lessons is what I'd like to do. Play more, you know, set up another band, go out and play every weekly.
I mean, you peaked when you were 19 in a bizarre kind
of and way. I think, and what I was going to say is I don't, it's not impossible for you or any one of us in this room to have another hit, whatever that might be. Mm. It's not impossible. It's unlikely. And actually, I think it's kind of fair enough. The fact we're doing a podcast with the name that it has suggests suggests that we are not the racehorses that we once were, mentally or physically, probably. You know? And that's good and fine, and we should celebrate that. So basically, I'm very happy to put my feet up and do the garden and read the paper and that kind of thing in the in the near future. Having to do the next 5 years of really slogging it out does not fill me with any kind of pleasant feelings, but I've just got to do that. I've got to do another 5 years, and then I can hopefully go, you know what? I can wind it down.
Mm.
This was the disappointing result of stopping doing that contract with the Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will be 60 next November. So not this one coming, but the one after. And we talked about taking 2025 off and having like a year-long sabbatical and kind of, you know, winding things down and, you know, going off and having an adventure. But obviously that's, you know, been kind of forced upon us a little bit earlier in terms of stopping doing that. But the interesting thing is that when I look back over the last kind of 7 years or so, you know, you think I'd got to a point where I was at total burnout, you know, professionally, emotionally, everything. I was a wreck. So decided to go off to Australia for a couple of years. And that was brilliant. And then we came back and I had a book to finish. And then about 2 months after we came back, I get a phone call from the Swiss. And 5 years later, you know, I'm still working for them. So what I'd lost along the way was that necessity to have to, you know, do what obviously freelancers have to do, which is to, you know, stress about getting work and finding work and making sure you'd finish the work to get paid for the work. And quite frankly, I think I'm too old for that now. You know, I actually stopped doing that 7 years ago. So the prospect of going back to doing anything like that is really not particularly appealing. So what I'd really like to do is I'd like to spend, you know, 3 days a month, sorry, 3 days a week working for somebody where I could do my, you know, regularly use my creative talents for things, you know, at some kind of senior level or whatever, and then spend a couple of days wearing a string vest and shorts and sitting on a bench in the south of France.
Yes.
Let's bring it back to Albergo Loche. Because, you know, you do get to a certain point where, you know, the mortgage is paid and the cars are all paid off, so you don't have to earn the megabucks anymore.
Yeah, I'm not at that stage yet.
But it's just just having that regularity and not having to be necessarily hungry all the time. Because I do think you get to a point in your life where, you know, it's too hard to do.
John, what about you? Because you're a little bit, you're more of my age, or even a little bit younger, if I remember rightly. So do you feel you're getting to the latter half of things? Do you feel yourself slowing down? Do you resent having to get work
I resent
more?
A lot of things. And that list, again, there's the can't be asked list and there's the resentment list. And, yeah, those lists grow as you get older. No. But my problem generally is the fact that I can't plan ahead. So, and Lee's the same, you know, like planning a holiday, we don't tend to do that until maybe 2 or 3 months before. Some people do it like the year before, but we can't think that way. And at the moment, I can't think beyond end of the week or, you know, or beyond the fact that there's right. a piece of pork pie in the fridge behind me that is really like on my mind at the moment. And if we weren't recording a podcast, I would be tucking into the pork pie. Yeah, exactly. See, now you're thinking about the pork pie as well. I should have plans. I know this, and I should have goals that I'm aiming for. But at the moment, I'm just taking each day and just being glad that I've got some work, and rolling with it. And at the moment, like, it's very, very busy. It's not always very busy, but at the moment, it is very busy. And I can't think beyond that. You know, I don't have plans, and obviously retirement would be lovely. Like you, Marcus, I've got any number of... There's another folder of things in my head. The things to do when I don't have to work for other people list.
I've got an actual list of those.
Like you, I don't think I'll be one of those people that needs to work to... you know, only maybe to escape kind of like grandchildren care duties. But apart from that...
Yeah. When it's convenient, yeah, you'll need to work.
My little brother is 6 years younger than me. Married a woman from New Zealand, and they live down in London somewhere. They are emigrating to New Zealand in November this year. And he's been doing what's to do with wine, Marcus? Is it Somalia?
Or sommelier.
Sommelier.
Yes.
He's been doing his sommelier courses.
Sommelier. Brilliant.
Sommelier. And he's going to go off to New Zealand and will do whatever it is to do with wine when he gets there. You know, he might work in the wine shop. Or he might want to be, you know, a wine waiter, or he might want to be a something, as opposed to the, you know, high level banker that he is right now. So,
yeah,
I wonder what if I had a second thing, a second chapter, what that second chapter activity would be. You know, I wouldn't go off and talk about wine, but I wonder what it would be.
This is where the conversation started with this guy that I was chatting to. Exactly the same thing of, well, perhaps I should pack it in and go and do something different. And he concluded there wasn't anything he would prefer to be doing necessarily. And I think that's almost trickier in some stage where you reach our kind of age. You know, Marcus, it's cut and dry. You know, he obviously is going to, when he gets to retire, he's going to have, you know, endless things to keep him entertained. When, and almost, John, in your situation and in yours, Andy, there's a degree where you can still fiddle around with design stuff. You can still do creative stuff, but without the downside of having to keep bringing in clients. And that's got its place. In my kind of situation, I'm less sure because I don't have that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Let me just dive in there, because I'm going to be nice to you, Paul. Even though I took the piss a little bit and said that Andy and John are the creative types, once upon a time, you were a very good designer. So, you know, don't put yourself down. Maybe you could go back there.
But it's not, I don't feel a desire to go back to that kind of thing, really. And I don't think it would give me a love. It's not like I've lost my first love or any of that kind of thing. But there's something John said that I wanted to pick up on, because I'm kind of coming to terms with this myself. You said, I feel like I should have plans and a kind of attitude towards all this kind of stuff and know where I'm going. I'm wondering whether by our point in life, you don't need plans. It doesn't matter.
Mm.
You know, as long as you're happy and as long as you're content where you are, we're almost, the pressure, we don't need to grow our career or no. have a career plan or any of that mm-hmm. shit anymore. We, you know, we can just kind of see how it goes and what takes our fancy. My only fear is I fall into that trap that Marcus mentioned of I need to work to remain engaged and stimulated as a person. And that worries me slightly that I'll just, get, you know, start drooling out the corner of my mouth when I don't have work to keep me thinking.
Stop.
But other than that, start dribbling. Yeah, no, I only do that at night now when I sleep. But when it starts happening in the day, that's a problem.
You need to be into this, but there are many opportunities to volunteer your time in a work-like way for your local community or absolutely. Whatever, you know. And that horrifies me, but probably 2 years down the line of not having as much to do, you probably think, well, yeah, I probably should, you know, pull my finger out and do something helpful or useful.
I don't like people or the world, and so I feel... Now, in all seriousness, I suspect what I will do is I will actually carry on doing coaching. I'll carry on doing some consultancy into retirement as an extra bit of play money as and when I feel like doing it. And travelling. I'll be travelling all the time because that's where my real passion lies. So I suspect that's where it's coming from. But it's also, it's that, I think when you've, I'm going to use a Gary Vaynerchuk word, and I really apologise even mentioning his name, let alone using one of his terms. But when you've been hustling for 30 years of trying to constantly bring work and keep your career going, it's quite a big step to go, no, I can stop that now. It's okay. Mm. It's okay if I take my foot off the pedal, mm-hmm. you know? And that's quite a big transition to make, certainly in my mindset at least.
It will be for me. It'll take me probably 6 months to kind of get used to the idea of not doing it anymore.
Do you still get royalties, Marcus?
I do, yes.
Really? They're still coming in?
Yes, I do, yeah.
So good. Good for you.
It's good for me. I feel like I've been picked on at the moment.
No, so. It was...
Just, no, don't feel like that, Marcus.
Just imagine what would happen if one of your old tracks gets picked for Stranger Things or a Marvel movie
that,
or something
that
like
would
that.
Be obviously very marvellous. But yeah, it's still they do get picked up by... You know, there was a Brazilian film, I think it was, used it as a kind of like the couple walk into the bar and we want to... And it's like, you know, you get paid a few thousand for that. So thank you very much.
It was the reaction when you were asked about royalties that gave me the impression like, we're not just talking 50p every quarter, are we? You had that look of, there was a slight, not, I wouldn't say smugness, but certainly a kind of, yes, I do.
I'm feeling bad now, Marcus, because you got to do an amazing thing when you were young, and I've always been a little bit envious of the life that you led when you were young and the things that happened to you. Yeah, I mean, it was truly
for
incredible.
For viewers at home, Marcus and is pointing at his silver disc.
I've also, in a weird... I'm saying nice things. This is never good. But I've also got a huge respect for you in some ways because that is a hard thing to go from all of that when you're very young to doing a job for best part of 30 years that isn't your real passion. Mm. I mean, so anything you get out of that from those early years, I consider well earned when you're doing a job that isn't your thing.
Thank you, Paul.
Have you still got your costume?
Oh, I've still got a few what you would consider costumes, yes. I can't really get in them anymore.
No shit.
This is a little bit sad. And why is it whenever you go to get your suit out of the cupboard, it's what makes them smaller?
Shrunk.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
I've got a funeral on Friday, and I am absolutely dreading heading to that section of the wardrobe.
You've got to do it early
Andy,
on Friday.
I would do it now. Yeah. When we finish this, go and do it now. I could do the trousers up,
But I couldn't do the jacket up. So it didn't matter because I didn't need to. The trousers went up, but I mean, it wasn't the most comfortable day of my life. But then on the kind of theme of this show, maybe we worry about those things a little bit too much and we just accept that we're getting a bit rounder. As I think you used the word rotund when you were describing Albert earlier, and maybe that's where we're headed.
You speak for yourself. Albert is a fine figure of
is
a
he?
Man.
Is he?
He is. There's beaucoup to get hold of. So shall we wrap it up? We haven't talked about electric vehicles or ghosting or anything else, but
next time,
I suggest
next time.
That we have a podcast before the next 6 months.
Oh,
maybe
right
we
then.
Could do it in a few weeks' time and we could catch up and talk about the things that we didn't do today.
Sounds like a plan. Right.
And I can tell you how good the pork
thank
pie
you
was.
Very much. Thank you very much.
It looked gone pretty off by that point.
My turn.
Thank you very much for tuning in.
We're going to keep interrupting you, Andy. No, do it. No, seriously, do it now.
Thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of One Footer in the Grave. Oh, jeez, I forgot what I was going to say. It just put me off completely.
It worked.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of One Footer in the Grave, and we'll see you next time.
God willing.
Au revoir.